This is The Lay of the Land with academic and deep thinker Luba Maya-Kiso.
Luba Maya-Kiso, here we are again talking about behavior of children.
Yes, we are, Howard. So it's rather sad, I'm afraid.
It is rather sad and quite incredible that there seems to be an unbelievable amount of attention and focus on behavior of children. You know, just earlier this week, there was a school in the United States where the kids took a photo. They were doing a Sig Heil, and of course, they had to apologize. There was an incident in the UK as well with this type of thing. So we're starting to maybe not only maybe kids have always behaved in ways that they chose to, and without even getting into the merits of the behavior, do you think that we are just becoming more obsessed with scrutinizing everybody? I actually feel incredibly sorry for kids on some level.
I think kids have always done stupid things and things that they'll regret, but unfortunately, news gets around a little bit better these days. We've got social media. When we had the Durban incident, and if you look at the one in Herzliya, a lot more people on email, and you have sites like News24. So things like these are reported, I think, are given more coverage in the media, and therefore they're just a little bit harder to sweep under the carpet. I don't necessarily think it's anything new. It's always been there. And
it's just our dealing with it. It's just how we deal with it that has changed, you're saying.
Absolutely.
So what are your thoughts on you've got a child at Herzliya, right?
No, I had. I mean, he was at this middle school and high school.
That's why I couldn't remember if you still had a child there or if you used to have a child there.
No, okay. I used to have one at Kerem, and then I had one at high school. Mm-hmm. But I've kind of seen similar issues in the sense that I think my view is this. You've got Herzliya, which is essentially, a Jewish day school. And my view would be that leaning very strongly on Zionism principles. Now, on Zionist principles, I accept that there may be parents who don't necessarily buy to the issue of Israel, Zionism, and so forth, for whom this may be problematic. But I'm always a believer that you choose to go to a particular school that has a set of values, and you have to then kind of abide by those values. Look, let me give you a crazy scenario. Picture me sitting in school in 1980-81 in Cape Town during the height of apartheid and Bantu education. I'm a black kid, and guess what? We've got to sing the national anthem. It was a problem. But the fact was, this is the school that my parents had enrolled me in, and the school said, we have to sing the national anthem. You may not necessarily feel it's your anthem, but this is where you are. And so there was very little room to move. And I think today we really overplay people's freedom and choices, but you've made a choice to align yourself with a particular school. And I think you have to then accept that. You know, we had kids, for instance, who were Muslim and who would object to assembly and prayers, but the school was adamant that this is a Christian school and this is what we do. We pray during assembly and this is how we pray and we go to chapel. You have to be there. Now, the interesting thing is, with the advent of democracy and people jumping up and down about their rights, that has had to change even in Christian schools, where somebody will come and say, I'm Muslim, I don't believe in Christianity, therefore I need to be exempt from prayers and I need to go to mosque on Fridays. And I think more from a commercial aspect and this fear of how do we deal with freedoms, schools have almost had to compromise. And I think that is where you probably find a school like Herzliya, in the sense that you're very clear as a school about what you stand for, but you have children whose parents have different views, and you're almost forced to accommodate that.
Well, I would imagine, and as I was saying to our listeners earlier, is I've had some experience with across Jewish day schools talking about Israel advocacy and the media, etc. And I've come across some very, very robust discussion and arguments and different belief systems within that environment. And my observation, and I can't talk about Herzliya, but I can't imagine it's any different, is in front of the principal, in front of the teachers, these discussions and these conversations were allowed to happen, and the kids were allowed to express their view in a very, very robust and open manner. But that is very, very different to taking it to something external to the school. Surely the school has the right to say, you know what, we do have an open – there are times that you can have an open discussion. But the fact that you haven't convinced us of your view is just something you're going to have to deal with. So you can express your view in a classroom or in another environment. But when it comes to a certain time, which is prize giving, you are not allowed – that is not the appropriate time to express your view.
You know, Howard, I put on two caps. There's one which is similar to yours, and then my other cap that I put on is that of being, you know, being involved in lobbying and Israel advocacy. So whilst I agree with you in that regard, but we have to admit that obviously the kids chose this deliberately because they knew that it would cause some kind of sensation and drama. So it's not as if it was by some freak accident that they decided to do this. So you'd probably think it was, again, premeditated and it was done for maximum exposure. The challenge that I have, though, is that the Jewish community has to almost walk a very delicate line and balance two opposing views. One is defending, let's say, Israel and Zionism. Then on the other side is defending freedom of speech. And I've always known that within the Jewish community, there's almost this contest of ideas, and you have to make room for it. And, you know, the joke about a Jewish person being stranded on an island and building two synagogues. Whilst in many cases it's good academically, in the practical sense, it does create problems. It creates unnecessary drama. I've seen cases where, for argument's sake, soldiers were brought out. I forgot what they operate under. Wounded soldiers from Israel who came to a Jewish day school, and whilst most kids were sympathetic and were full of praise for what they were doing to defend the state of Israel, you have one or two kids who are kind of like would pipe up and say, well, but if you weren't in somebody else's land, you wouldn't have got injured, which is incredibly insensitive. Now, but you would only get that typically in a Jewish school. For instance, I remember my son telling me, and I mean, this is a bit shocking, but I just want to show you the variety of ideas where one kid kind of cut his hair very short, and his peers would kind of joke and call it a Holocaust haircut. Now, very insensitive, but this is what I came to expect in the Jewish community, that you're going to get very contrasting ideas. Where for me it became difficult was if you go to places like university campuses, where now some students and soldiers were defending the right of Israel, and then you had to sit and have Jewish students who were sitting in the opposing camp. And so it becomes less about people's freedom, and it became quite touchy. You know, I had a daughter, for instance, who had gone to Israel, and she came back, but she found the other side knew her movements, where she'd been, and Jewish kids who were now pro, let's say, the Israeli apartheid week camp, were happily telling her that this is Cassie, this is what she was doing, and all of that. And she felt that her safety was being compromised. And it was difficult for me, because now how do I deal with this? Because effectively, you've got Jewish students who you expect to be standing on this side with you, who are standing on the other side. And fine, it's freedom of speech, freedom of association. But then you felt that now your safety was being compromised.
Carry on.
So I've always felt that, again, I always seem to be lashing out at parents. For me, I've always felt that a lot of these issues you get in Jewish schools will always go back to the family. You know, if the family are proud Zionists, then you won't have this. But if the family is fairly indifferent or anti, then you will have more of these incidents taking place. And the challenge here with this kid is that if you throw the book at them, you know, they will say, I'm vindicated because you're intolerant in Zionism. And that's what makes it very challenging.
Which actually proves the very point that they're trying to make, even though they haven't made it. What bothers me, there are a couple of things that I want to add to that is one of, I think there's a third option of how to deal with it. And that is actually to ignore it and let the school deal with it, which was my initial response. I don't really care what my own 14-year-old says. I certainly don't care about what other people's 14-year-olds say. And especially, you know, that level of privilege, telling us about, you know, sharing their wisdom. Well, that's great. You know, the grandparents, I'm sure, are very, very proud. I'm not. I don't need to hear it. So that was my original feeling around this. But then when it became a big story, and I had a run-in with Adrian Basson about it, editor of News 24, because, I made a flippant comment about an incident at my school, kids' school, where somebody didn't tuck in their shirt, and I'm waiting for the News 24 article on it. He said, come on, Howard, that's unfair. This is a big story. And it proves to be correct. The Jerusalem Post picked up on it. Daily Maverick picked up on it. It's all around the world. It clearly is a big story because taking a knee has become a very, very trendy. Of course, I also would ask what happened. In fact, similarly to what you're saying, and it's kind of different during the apartheid era, I think, because I think that you were properly victimized then to the extent that if you did take a knee during the South African anthem, you would have been in very, very serious trouble and actually physical danger. Would they have knelt during the South African anthem during the Zuma regime, which was arguably a horror for people poor people in terms of health, access to health, access to education, etc. Some terrible things.
Howard, sorry
have been
to
happening.
Catch you. Here's my question to you, though.
Yeah.
Don't you agree that kids start early? I hear you saying that who cares what a 13 or 14 year old does. My problem is you and I at age 13 or 14, I was busy reading, popular mechanics, drawing cars, and worried about other things. Kids these days are far more involved in activism than we were. And so I find it's very difficult to ignore the 13-year-olds. I mean, I've got a daughter now who's just turned 14.
Right.
She calls herself a feminist. She's concerned about causes. Right. I wasn't concerned about causes. I mentioned to you last time that she looks at history and she says to me, Dad, the Treaty of Versailles was patently unfair. I'm saying, who the heck cares? When you were studying history, you were just memorizing history. This child says to me, don't you think this was unfair? Why would anybody agree to this? So I think society, we've empowered children, and at a far earlier age, they feel that they should have views and ideas. And the challenge is that you can't ignore them because they will just get more, kind of braver and more involved in activism and start to form these ideas. And you have to somehow address these ideas and say, look, how do we channel this? And that's the issue.
Right.
Now, also, I think because there's a conflict in Israel, this issue is much more topical. The question I'm asking myself is, had this happened, let's say, a month ago, would it have made as much news? I don't know if the kids were necessarily tying it to the conflict, but because
no, they weren't because it happened last week Thursday. So this new conflict hadn't even escalated yet.
Oh wow! Okay, but it's certainly been given legs.
Oh sure.
You know.
Sorry, I just want to one of our listeners, Terence Austin, says there is no freedom of speech at a private school. Therefore, taking the knee at a private school should not be allowed. I'm not really sure what governs this in freedom of speech and this type of freedom of expression within a private school.
I'm not an expert on that because that's why I said to you in my introduction that on the one hand, you've got a private school saying that we have, as an independent school, these rules. We're a Jewish school, and that is, and let's say we would believe in Zionism. So you as a school can say this is what we believe in. But can that trump the Constitution that then says to the kid, you've got a complete freedom to express your views and to do whatever you want to? And I think that's the challenge that in my days, I had no constitution to protect me. Whereas today, you're trying to balance a nation that has gone from being repressive to, boom, having one of the most liberal constitutions, which in some ways makes us punch drunk as we try and grapple and understand how far we can flex our freedoms. And I think this is the problem. So I agree with what the person has said, that a private school should be able to form its policies, but those policies can never take away from your constitutional
rights.
Yes,
except
this is the problem.
It's just not a blanket. It's not a blanket right. So if you're busy writing an exam, and I now want to stand out and shout out the answers because that's my right to express myself however I want within my school environment, that's freedom of expression. But there are rules around it, and it doesn't make sense, and it undermines the school, and it undermines an education system. It can't be that at a school prize giving during the singing of a national anthem to which the school subscribes that anything is possible. It just can't be. As I say, as long as the school And if it doesn't encourage freedom of choice, freedom of expression, then take your kid out the school. But if the school in general allows this kind of robust argument, which I imagine Herzliya does, as I say, just looking at some of most of the other Jewish day schools, if it allows them, then there still can be a time and a place for those discussions, and a time and place for those discussions not to take place.
Okay, Howard, let's walk away from it being a Jewish issue and let's make it a broader South African issue. Mm-hmm. You watch a rugby game, you watch a cricket game, and we have the South African national anthem.
Right.
And still till this day, you will see one group mumble or keep quiet through the first part of the anthem, which is sang in vernacular.
Right.
And then when we hit the stem, suddenly those same people come alive and they start singing with vigor.
Right.
And the opposite occurs. What do we do? What do we say? Because in some ways, it's showing disrespect. It might not be taking the knee. I know if I look around in the black community, many people don't want to sing the stem and they keep quiet. Mm. And so they will make it quite clear and they will sing quite, you know, joyously and vibrantly the first two stanzas, which are in vernacular. And then when you get to the stem, they'll keep completely quiet. And all fidget, but they'll try everything they can to show that I'm not interested, I'm not taking part in that. Mm. And I think these are the challenges. What do we say to them? Do we say, get out of the country? You don't belong in the country. So I'm just saying there's a lot of tension, and how we deal with it as a nation has been very poor, because we just don't deal with it. We just let it play out. Hence, I'm saying, if you watch the Springboks play rugby, it's very seldom that you see them. You hear them sing a full national anthem, and I'm not singling them out, but I know that these emotions still run very deep. I look at our children, I find, our children can sing the national anthem and they have no problem. If I were to be brutally honest with you, I still struggle with the stem, because for me growing up, it was a form
I hear that 100%, I must tell you.
So that's why I'm saying, anthems are crazy things, and you're thinking that people should not be using them as a form of protest, but people do, because it is an emotional, you know, when you sing your anthem, it is very emotional.
I just want to read you a comment of a listener. Keeping quiet is totally an option, but it's certainly not the same as an overt action like taking a knee. One is an act of omission, the other is a blatant act of commission. Huge difference.
Yeah.
Which I hear, and I happen to agree with that.
I agree too. Yeah. The question, though, is how do you deal with it? Because, again, for me, I think it's a broader issue. And do I think that you'll make the kids more anti-Zionist if you take action? There is that chance, but I think you certainly can't condone it. I think in a school, as I think you and I have debated many times, that school and academic places are places of engagement, robust engagement, but there have to be rules. There has to be some decorum. Otherwise, like you're saying, a person can shut out the answers in an exam. So I think the kids certainly must be encouraged to express their views, to challenge Zionism, to challenge whatever views that they think should be challenged. But there's a place. I think assembly is not that prize giving is not the place. Right. This is grandstanding.
Well, that's my view, and I feel like it's you know, to borrow an American expression, they're calling it a dog whistle. This is very, very much a dog whistle. The taking the knee, calling out this type of thing, and it's a very, very real concern for me, because you know we hear the word freedom of expression and we get all jittery, because we've lived in a country and we've lived in a place that didn't allow freedom of expression. We had to fight very, very hard to be able to express ourselves. But it doesn't mean that anything goes at any time. You know, we don't walk around the streets just screaming obscenities, and it's because it's our freedom of expression. We need society needs a way in which to function, and that's a greater society. A smaller society, which is a school, which is its own ecosystem, also needs a space and a way in which to function. Their rules and their rules of engagement, whether we want to acknowledge that or not. And I really do feel that from an education point of view, this is a very, very serious issue, because we're telling the kids that no matter what you feel, you can just express it, you can vomit it out at any time, no matter who gets hurt and no matter what the damage it does to the school, to your friends. I mean, that's another aspect.
It's reckless, because you will leave that school, you will graduate, you will go to university, and you'll probably find yourself in the corporate world. And in the corporate world, there's a certain brand image that you must maintain. You may not agree with it, but you have to uphold that. I mean, I think back in my banking days, and sometimes we'd have a protest. I remember Blade Zimande was leading the march against banks when it came to their lending practices. And it fell upon me. Somebody said, go down to there's a protest outside Standard Bank and receive the petition. And then I was told, do not say anything because you may say something that does not embody what we believe in. Your job is to go down, simply thank them for the petition, take it and return and say somebody will respond. Mm. What your feelings have nothing to do with. So I understand what you're saying, that if you have to abide by the rules of the place that you choose to associate with, because Hertzler didn't go to your home and grab kids and drag them to the school. Parents chose the school. And so, yes, I would say to a huge degree, you have to comply with the rules of that particular institution because it is what you have chosen, for better or for worse, and you have to abide by that. Now, the question that I'd like to ask is, have we heard anything from the parents? You know, any thoughts, any views, a response?
Well, I would argue that everything we've heard so far has been from the parents.
No, I do, but formally, because... Again, I agree with you. A lot of this is driven from home. Mm. And I used to become quite unpopular at schools where I would often say the challenges around Zionism begin at home. You as a parent take a stand. You either choose to teach your kids to be proud of their identity or not, and then you leave them susceptible to peer pressure. Or in some cases, you steer them in the opposite direction. And I think that's the challenge. And I've always said, well, that challenge, unfortunately, the school kind of deal with, because it's something that comes from outside of the school. And it manifests itself in the school. And the school is left with the impossible issue of trying to raise your kid, of trying to instill, let's say, certain values, which you have chosen not to do so at home.
Unsigned says it's ridiculous, so self-absorbed and self-righteous, virtue signaling from them, thinking about them compared to the people who sacrifice their lives, and they're not they prefer not to talk about it. Well, again, that's the other thing that I was saying a little bit earlier. What they did is sit. What they did is nothing. You know, how about a bit? It would be so much more powerful if they were doing something, an action, something positive, bringing, you know, doing something good for the people around them. And I don't know necessarily, of course, that they don't. I don't know these kids, but it really is a very, very lazy, attention-seeking thing to just go down on one knee.
Here's the thing, Howard. It's very easy to sit in the relative safety of a suburb in Cape Town. You're living in on the Candix board, you go to school, you're protected. But I remember I've seen tons of emails come through to my computer where it's stories like kids in Sderot are running for cover. This is the trauma they're facing. And that for me becomes a tragedy, is that for the kids who need the support of you know, from Israel, for them it's a daily experience of hell, of having to run to bomb shelters. And here we are 10,000 k's away. And kids can flippantly dismiss it because it doesn't affect them, because we live in relative safety. And that sometimes, I think, is a tragedy, is the person who's far away, who's not really affected, who's got no interest in it, often makes a very careless, disparaging comment or action like this. And, you know, I don't wish them to be under any threat, but I think that's the trouble with sometimes being an armchair critic of sitting in safety. I remember my very first trip to Israel, I spent some time in Sderot and I drove around and I looked at the bomb shelters, I visited the schools, I could see the distance. And I certainly said as a person, I wouldn't want to live here. But I was seeing people who were going to work and kids who were going to school who looked perfectly normal. And I was really impressed with how brave they were under the conditions. And I think this is the trouble, is that kids like these often have no understanding of the situation that they're commenting about. And it's very easy to sit in the comfort of Cape Town or Johannesburg and make these comments.
Absolutely right. Luba Mayakiso, wonderful speaking to you as always. I'm glad we started a little bit earlier today, so at least to give us the time to flesh out this issue. I'd love to continue hearing from you on 34519 or 061-895-1019. It is a conversation that I didn't want to be having, but as I explained, I had very little choice but to do so. Luba Mayakiso, have a fantastic day and a great weekend ahead.